Welcome back to the Weight Loss Injection Revolution podcast. I'm Dr. Josh Luke. This is part two of our interview with the Chief Medical Officer from Noom. Check it out at noom.com. Dr. Linda Anagawa, thanks for joining the show and welcome back.
Thank you so much, Josh. It's terrific to be here.
I was surprised I interviewed a nutritionist from Cleveland Clinic and affiliated with the Today Show back in January, and she was made the comment that she was recommending to her female clients that they stay on the injections permanently. And that was the first I'd heard that. I've heard it a lot more since then. I guess I was just surprised because, you know, in comparison, these drugs are about the same age as the vaccine for COVID, right? So nobody can claim they know the long-term impact. Nobody
can. Not exactly. The drugs have actually been around for quite a long time.
Okay.
The first drug in its class, and this class was approved about 18 years ago for the treatment of type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
You know, we actually have some reasonable long-term data, but on the older versions of the drug, which were not quite as powerful, but essentially they're the same or very, very similar, right? So from what we know from about 18 years of experience from GLP-1 boosters is that they are relatively safe. But that being said, they're still pharmaceuticals, right, Josh?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
To me, even though I'm a classically trained internist, I never take any pharmaceutical prescription lightly.
Yeah.
And most of the patients that I treat really want to eventually aim to come off of their medications. Oftentimes, that's the reason why they come to see an obesity medicine specialist in the first place, because they're like, you know, I'm on eight different drugs for all these different things. I don't want to be on these things for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, here's the thing. I think that there are plenty of individuals who, if they undergo habit change and can transform in that way, it is possible to come off medications. But other individuals, that process of metabolic adaptation that fights back against weight loss in the body is so strong that these individuals might be taking the drugs longer term or possibly even lifelong. You know, like I think about patients I've treated who have had bariatric surgery and regained all the weight, right? There's no amount of willpower that can fight against metabolic adaptation in your body, right? Or if you have insulin resistance that is extremely severe, you're going to be one of those people who stores fat very efficiently. Maybe evolutionarily, back in the cave people times, that gene served your ancestors very well, right? That you could store fat so efficiently because, I mean, listen, we couldn't just go to the drive-through, you know, to get a burger and a shake and fries, right? Yeah. We had to hunt, we had to gather. It was hard for us to acquire energy sources.
Yeah, so this is such good stuff. So one of the things I do on the show is I've taken our listeners along on my journey, you know, not to say, hey, I'm going to keep it off, but to say, hey, let's see how I struggle. And I'm 6 weeks off. I've been traveling the last week. So when I left, I probably was maybe 2 to 3 pounds over the weight I stopped at, which I think you always assume that's actually your, what do you call it? Your set weight.
That point,
you're always going to gain a couple back the minute you quit counting. And so I've been able to stay pretty steady, less this last week where I was traveling, but I'll just hit it hard this week. But my question is, and I've shared this on the show, my wife and I are boaters. We go out to Lake Havasu a lot in the summer, and we tend to gain our weight in June, July, and August, and we always find ourselves dieting by the end of August or September. So what are your thoughts on if I'm off the injections for, let's say, 6 months, and then in June and July, I were just to go back on them, you know, just for a couple months? Is there some negative impacts to that?
Yeah. You know, it really hasn't been studied. The question of intermittent use is very, very interesting. We really don't know very much about what happens to people's bodies with intermittent use.
Yeah.
I have people who are utilizing the drug in that way or who ask about that. My recommendation is to find a way to measure your body composition like regularly, like every 4 to 8 weeks. Because like I mentioned, the real danger is, you know, if you're somebody who's kind of yo-yoing and your weight is going up and down, over time that can erode the body composition. If every time you lose weight, you're losing lean mass. So InBody is a fantastic brand. A lot of gyms have them. In-person obesity medicine offices rather often have an in-body body composition analyzer, which is super helpful. So you can see exactly what's going on and then make the needed adjustments. I mean, another option, rather than intermittent GLP-1 use, would be to use something alternate on a daily basis over the long term. So, like, for example, if I have somebody who has insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, they've been pre-diabetic or diabetic, a lot of times I think it can be a nice idea to have an individual like that on metformin longer term, because even though metformin doesn't have the most amazing weight loss data associated with it, it actually has better data associated with it for weight maintenance, particularly for those types of individuals. Now, if you're more of an emotional eater or craver, the metformin is probably not going to do so much, but then maybe bupropion, naltrexone, or Contrave could be a better choice. So, you know, it's all in the personalization. It's really hard for me to say, Josh, like, you know, oh yeah, this is a good idea for all users. It's, I mean, our bodies are all so different. And, you know, another key factor there, another key point is that, I mean, having a quote unquote abnormal BMI, we don't even know if that's really healthy or unhealthy. We know bodies can be healthy at a wide range of sizes and shapes. And the idea is not necessarily to get the entire United States of America to a BMI of 22, right? That's not necessarily healthy, necessary, or realistic.
Okay, so my guest is Dr. Linda Inagawa, Chief Medical Officer with Noom. I have a couple more questions. This is part two of our interview. And some of it just piggybacks on what we talked about in part one, which is some of the side effects I wanted to ask you about. I've been off the injections for 6 weeks, and I've noticed what I call regurge. And my wife always goes, "Oh, you mean you had a burp?" And I go, "Actually, no, I don't really need a burp. I just kind of have that feeling from the stomach to the chest," which I don't know that I ever noticed having that prior to being on the injections for 6 months, but now I do notice it. So can you speak to the, and I've had a tiny bit of nausea just in the morning, which usually means I'm hungry, or if I'm having, it's really weird. I get it when I have green tea from, or black tea from Starbucks iced tea, but it's top of mind. And so it wasn't pre-injection, but is there more to that? Because in a way I feel like, man, I'm still having side effects and I've been off it for 6 weeks.
Yeah, interesting. So a few things to remember about these drugs, the latest class of the highly effective anti-obesity medications like semaglutide or Ozempic, Wegovy. So the half-life of these drugs is very long. So putting on my pharmacology hat here again. So what does that mean? The half-life means the amount of time it takes for your body to burn off half the drug in the system. It doesn't mean, though, that in two half-lives, all of the drug is gone. So, for example, the half-life of Ozempic is about a week, and it can take your body anywhere from 5 to 7, or even longer in some people, half-lives to burn all that drug out of your system. So it is actually common, and I've seen this quite a bit, for people to still be experiencing not just the side effects, but also the appetite reduction effects of the drug for quite a while longer, even after they stop it. And, you know, I think if you're still having any gastrointestinal symptoms, even after coming off of it, the tips that I really like to give patients are, number one, you know, make sure that your portions are very small still, because I think it's like when we come off of a medication like this, our first impulse is, okay, I'm off the medication. Now I can eat. What were my normal portions before? You probably can't. You probably still need to have smaller portions. And it might even be better to have a smaller portion, but eat a little bit more frequently, and really paying attention to those signals of hunger and fullness. I think a lot of us in our modern society, you know, like rushing from one meeting to the next, or, you know, rushing here, one chore, you know, picking up kids, doing all these things that we have to do, we're not very mindful with our eating, right? We're typically snacking on the go. We're eating at our desk while we're reading or working. So taking a step back and really engaging in mindfulness practices can be very, very helpful, because you might suddenly realize, oh, you know what? I'm probably, you know, eating larger portions than I were before. And sometimes just cutting back on those portions can help alleviate a lot of those side effects. The other thing, though, too, is if anything is persistent, you should always run it by your doctor and make sure there's nothing else going on. You know, there was some media attention given to some side effects, like, oh, could you have long-term gastroparesis, or essentially malfunctioning of the gut due to these drugs? We really don't have data that that can occur yet. But again, I always say get checked by your doctor. Everyone's body is very different.
Yeah, you make so many great points. And that's the one point we always have made on this show, is the first step in your journey is to consult a physician, preferably one that knows you, not just one of the NPs or something that's assigned to one of these clinics or online distributors, because it is a personal plan. There is a show where we said four steps to start your journey. And, you know, I don't want to give away the four steps, but the first one is always, you know, consult a doctor. So check out that show. I think it's our, I think it might be our top downloaded show with more than 2,000 downloads. So check it out. My guest is Dr. Linda Inagawa, Chief Medical Officer with Noom, but also a very accomplished obesity medicine doctor. Started a undergraduate program, I understand, at the University of Hawaii. Been recognized by the Kaiser Health Foundation. Just so many, a serial startup person in health tech and AI. So there's so much to cover. But you mentioned earlier having a protein first approach, and that kind of sounded like something that's just entrenched in who you are, regardless of, you know, what company you're working with or representing. It just kind of sounded like you're just a protein first. So explain to me what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think the first thing to know is that protein makes up all the building blocks of everything in your body. It is an essential nutrient, along with fat. Protein and fat are actually the only two nutrients, macronutrients, that we need to survive, as it turns out. You actually don't even need carbohydrates to survive. Protein is also a nutrient that, when we are losing weight, can be in jeopardy, particularly if we're using injection weight loss medications. Why? Because hunger drops dramatically. Mm-hmm. Side effects such as nausea, heartburn, abdominal pain, protein becomes the last thing on our list that we might want to eat, right? If you're feeling queasy, think about it. What do you go for, Josh, if you're feeling queasy? Like, first thing that comes to your mind if you want to eat something but you're queasy? Crackers, toast, right? Yeah. Like, so emphasizing the role of protein is so, so, so important. It actually will help the medications work more effectively in your body. It'll help preserve lean mass. It'll help preserve vital organ function that is so, so necessary. And
so I'm staring at my protein powders over here on my counter, and I'm thinking, as soon as the show's over, I need to mix one of those up. I never was a protein shake guy, because I always thought it was like for dieters or meal replacement. And really, doing the show, I've really learned it might be a meal replacement once in a while, but it's more for me, like you said, I realized the importance of making sure I'm having protein on a consistent basis. So I do probably one or two a week now, which I've never done before. And so I appreciate you emphasizing that. I wanted to ask you about only one of our guests in the, you know, 40 or so shows we've done was kind of a naysayer. Her name's Nurse Deb. I've known her for years. She's in the health benefits space. She does coaching for companies to help their employees with their healthcare. You know, not all that different than some of the services that Noom provides, but hers is contracted out to different commercial providers and groups. But in any case, she was pretty adamant, and actually wasn't as firm on our show as I know she is in her heart, that she's not a huge fan of the GLP-1s, because if you're going to have the willpower, you don't need them, was her opinion, right? And it is her opinion. Yeah. Because my wife and I are living proof that we needed it. And now, what I like about your approach is kind of taking her same philosophy of you got to have the willpower and make a long-term lifestyle change. And this is, I don't want to say a shortcut, but it really gives you this boost, a quick start to do that. But as you pointed out, you must go into this with a long-term lifestyle change view, vision, and goal, or it's going to be short-lived, just like all the other binge diets. Would you agree?
Well, I love this topic.
Yeah.
I get asked this quite a lot, and I have really strong opinions about this one. So I love to break down this idea that obesity is purely a willpower issue. So first, it's critical to understand that obesity is a medical disease. Why do I say that? So it meets all the disease criteria. There is underlying pathology that we know happens in the body. There is hormonal dysfunction of the fat cell that occurs. There are characteristic symptoms and signs of a disease and harm results. And here's the thing. So even if it's worsened by unhealthy behaviors, obesity is still no less a disease than anything else. Hypertension, diabetes, sleep apnea, cancer, right? Would you tell somebody with cancer to just get more willpower for themselves? No. I mean, now, having said that, we do need some amount of willpower to bring ourselves to treatment, right? We need to, like, if we have cancer, we need to go to our chemo appointments, we need to take medications, we need to engage with our doctors. But willpower alone will never fix a medical disease. Second, I like to think about our underlying biology as human animals, right? We have a critical biological imperative, just like all animals, right? We have to reproduce. So to do that, we need to sleep and we need to be able to store energy. Some of us have been evolutionarily better able to store energy, like I said before. Some of us call that the thrifty gene hypothesis. And so what happens? We start making healthier changes, right? We want to get healthier. We want to lose weight. We might cut back on our eating. We might start exercising more. What happens is that this process of metabolic adaptation kicks in. This means that hundreds of hormones and signaling molecules are going to kick in, like they're saying, danger, danger, danger. Something's happening. Our energy stores are being depleted, right? So if you're one of those people that has very, very thrifty genes, you're going to be ramping up cravings in response to all of that, right? And no amount of willpower can overcome biology, right? I mean, drugs can help treat chronic diseases, absolutely, but they need help, right? Just like any chronic disease. Like, let's take the example of diabetes. If I have type 2 diabetes, I can take all the insulin in the world, but if I'm still drinking milkshakes 3 times a day, my sugar's not going to be controlled. So you do need the underlying habit change. That is indisputable, right? Our brain's craving pathways won't change long term without habit change. But yeah, the drugs are very, very important, just like for the treatment of any disease. So we have the medications. And we have what Noom was designed for, right? That behavior change anchor that maximizes the power of the medical treatment.
Such great stuff. Our last question for you is something we like to sign off with, which is, can you just share just a healthy go-to meal that you find yourself having a lot that maybe is 300 calories or less? I'm going to guess it's got a protein first approach. Just like to share some healthy meal ideas with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. My go-to meal, no matter where I am, and I'm on the road a lot, would be a salad with kale and lots of greens and salmon. Salmon is one of my favorite foods. I can eat it all the time and never get sick of it. And for breakfast, I love to have Greek yogurt, berries, and maybe some nuts. So
That's my
very, very protein
go-to.
forward.
I think we sound like a broken record on this show. Greek yogurt, blueberries, and granola, and salmon Caesar salad half the time because it's safe to find it on the menu. This has been so great. My guest has been Dr. Linda Anagawa, Chief Medical Officer from Noom. Check it out at noom.com. They have a ton of great programs. I really like the The circles, the Noom circles you discussed, not just for weight loss, but for all kinds of different things. It's really a modern approach to medicine, just combining the Eastern and Western approaches through the years to really improve health and help you take control of your own health. If you've ever read any of my books, you know I talk about being an EHC, an engaged healthcare consumer, and Noom has a lot of tools to help you become an EHC. So this is the Weight Loss Injection Revolution podcast. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.